I was drawn to a place in the sun.
Welcome to Mauitopia with Ori Kopelman. Ori Kopelman has spent 25 years of his career helping companies develop technology in a conscious way. In 1999, he permanently moved to Maui. As a majority shareholder in a management consulting firm, he founded in 1992 in Northern California, Global Brain, Inc. He taught clients worldwide his QRPD, Quality Rapid Product Development Methodology. This resulted in companies thriving through developing products in half the time, at half the cost, with substantially less pain, less corporate dysfunction, and more profit. A former Silicon Valley executive as vice president of engineering, Ori helped Mountain Computer Inc. grow tenfold in 6 years to $120 million in annual revenue. He taught QRPD at Stanford University's Continuing Studies Program and at the University of California, Berkeley Extension for about 15 years. He holds a Bachelor of Science degree in Electrical and Computer Engineering with distinction from Stanford University. Having grown up in the very cold Ann Arbor, Michigan, and in Israel, he also speaks Hebrew, German, and French. Community activities include Rotary Club of Maui and chairing the polling station in Kula for several elections. Or he's engaged in intense personal growth since 1990, including meditation, and believes in transformation through heightened awareness. He attends Grace and Unity churches and lives with cats, Eva and Calvin in Kahului. Aloha and welcome back, Ori.
Aloha, Cindy Paulus. Thank you so much for agreeing to co-host with me today.
Glad to be here.
And it's good that we're going to be talking. I know some people think this is a barbaric topic. Actually, my best friend who's going to call in, hopefully, believes that my love of football is a barbaric thing. But nonetheless, it is the college bowl season, as well as we're about to go into the NFL playoffs.
Yeah.
So I thought we would talk today about the benefits of competition versus cooperation.
Mm.
And I'd like to start by bragging about the time I spent at Stanford University.
Is this their song? Oh, no, that's your phone. I thought that was, and I guess you don't have the ringtone of the Stanford. Let's hear the real song that is the Stanford song. I never would have guessed that's a Stanford song. That really is, huh?
Well, that was, in fact, the Stanford fight song. And as I started saying, I was lucky enough to be a classmate of the very famous John Elway, who, as many of you know, went on to win 2 Super Bowls.
Wow. Did he ever get you free tickets?
No, actually. Ironically, the closest John ever came to winning the Heisman Trophy while he was in college for 4 years was second place, which is amazing.
Mm.
But I do remember sitting in the library at Terman Engineering and seeing him study. So he was not just a jock.
Mm-hmm.
He was an intelligent person. So that's one of my experiences with football. The other actually comes from earlier in my life in junior high school, where I went to junior high school in 9th grade in Ann Arbor, Michigan, with a guy called John Harbaugh, which some of you may know.
Yeah.
He is the coach of the Baltimore Ravens, who last year won the Super Bowl. They won the whole Super Bowl.
Yeah.
This year they didn't make the playoffs. But anyways, John was in my class. And believe it or not, he was not first string quarterback.
Wow.
I actually was third string quarterback. And John was second string quarterback. He was a good passer behind a guy who was a good runner, Bobby Lee. He was the first string quarterback.
Wow. So, but you know, most people think of quarterbacks as like bulky, massive monsters of people, right?
And he was not.
And you're not.
Well, thank you.
But I mean, you know, I actually don't like bulky monsters of people. But I mean, that is the preconceived idea you have, right?
If I was a foot taller, I probably would have been a better quarterback. And in fact, I went on to play tennis afterwards because I was better at that, and my height was not as big of a disadvantage. Both of these examples, both in terms of John Elway at Stanford and John Harbaugh in my junior high school, both these examples of competition shows how sometimes it can lead you to both a better position for yourself.
And I think we got Jarrell.
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 He's supposed
Jarrell.
To call at 12:25, and it's
well,
sorry,
Maui
1:25.
Time. It usually is later. This
I
is,
know.
Is
well, why don't we take the call?
Okay. Aloha, Jarrell. You're on the air with Ori Kopelman live.
Great. I'm just calling in late. It's the new year. All right, trying to get oriented. Thank you so much. Yeah, I was Ori's campaign manager when he ran for mayor.
Ah, yeah.
You're actually 14 minutes ahead of schedule.
You said 12:25.
1:25.
It's okay.
This is amazing.
It's Maui time, and this is Mauitopia.
That's right.
Right. In Mauitopia, we forgive.
We do.
But never forget.
Are you out in the jungle somewhere?
No, I'm actually in Maui Meadows at a lovely friend's home.
Oh, beautiful, because you live part-time out in towards Hana.
Long time ago. I was in, near Hana, but that was a few years back, and now I've been mostly in Maui Meadows and Kihei.
Mm-hmm.
Who am I speaking with?
This is Cindy, and...
Oh, hi, Cindy.
Sorry.
It's been forever. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, too. I saw you singing at Unity Church for the Christmas service there.
Christmas Eve. Wasn't that lovely?
Yes, it was.
Really fun. So Ori and I came up with the slogan, I don't know if he told you, live your dream in 2014.
I like that. I like that very much.
Yeah, we may make it into a bumper sticker and or a poster.
Yeah. Well, you know, or awaken to your dream, I like too. But I think live your dream in 2014 is really good.
It's a nice flow. Live your dream in 2014. Maybe we'll make it into a song.
What's your dream, Ori?
My dream is to create Mauitopia.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that is everybody doing what they love for work, which obviously requires them to look really at their creative side.
Yeah.
I mean, we can all find a way to make money, but that's not what really it's about. It's about, and in fact, on Maui, lots of people do this, that they find how to tap into their creative self and find a way to become what they were uniquely put on the planet to do.
Mm-hmm.
Do what you love and the money will follow is an old saying. Do what you love and the money will follow.
Right. Unfortunately, though, this whole money scheme or culture has created a very competitive environment.
Yes.
And that's why today's theme for the show is the benefits of competition versus cooperation.
Mm-hmm.
Jarrell, given that you have been a psychologist your whole life, we're curious if you have something to contribute about competition versus cooperation.
I hope so. First of all, like in playing tennis or in a swimming race, you have to cooperate in order to compete.
Mm-hmm.
You have to agree. Or baseball, you know, or football. Mm-hmm. You have to cooperate in order to compete. So cooperation is like a framework around competition.
Yeah, in this case, you're talking about the cooperation has to do with you. Both sides have to agree to a set of rules, right? Otherwise, it's just,
exactly.
It doesn't
exactly.
work. You can't really play a game.
Exactly. So cooperation is a precursor, prerequisite for competition to happen in many instances, probably not all. I'm just thinking whether there's competition without... What about war?
What about war?
Rules there.
Yeah.
There are rules.
There are rules, that's right.
I mean, now there's the Geneva Convention.
Yeah, yeah. There are some rules. Now, the thing is, that always throws a monkey wrench in the works, is there's some people that don't follow the rules. But even when it came down to the chemical warfare in Syria, which broke the rules, right? That's an example of how there was a rule, and that was the red line. And then they crossed the red line, right? And everyone we forget how close it was. We were all very nervous about what would happen if we went to war over them crossing that line, the
Correct.
Imaginary red line. And that was a showdown of sorts, right?
Yep. Yeah.
And the same thing with the Cuban war almost,
Cuban Missile Crisis.
Cuban Missile Crisis, almost because they crossed the line.
Right.
Right? Because they were going to be bringing nuclear arms into Cuba.
Right.
Yes.
They were called on it. So it's always an interesting point when you cross that line in rules of war, right? That's a biggie.
All right, I have a thought about the differences, if any, between men and women in cooperation and competition. And one of the goals of the Mankind Project that I'm involved in is to replace competition with cooperation among men. Now, I'm wondering if the same would hold for women. Any thoughts on that?
You know, it's very interesting because in our culture, and just I'm speaking from my own experience that I can speak of. When I began in radio as a DJ back in the early 70s, there were not a lot of DJs, so I had to compete as a woman in a man's field. And now that was an interesting situation because I had to be armed, and I use that word almost like with a military context. I had to be armed with tools where I had to be a little better and to prove myself, and I had to actually be prepared to be take some flack, and I was, and a lot of sexual innuendos, which at that time you did get. Now, I think in the military context for women, that is the same thing a lot of women went through in the early years of them being in the military as well.
Yes.
Right? And now I think now the new rules are being made so that there can't be as much discrimination against women, also sexual innuendos against women. Now, taking it out of just the military context, women, and I have to carefully say this, sorry, because I'm treading on fire here. Women tend to be very competitive with other women.
I know,
very
but can I go back for a second?
Yeah.
Can women fight in the front lines?
Not yet.
In the military? Yeah, see, that's what I was thinking.
Not yet.
Right.
Not yet. But women will be, and I have seen this in my careers, sometimes extremely competitive.
Oh, for sure.
As far as the way they dress, the way they look, what kind of cars they drive, the way, you know, it's all of that, especially growing up in Beverly Hills, it was like if you didn't have the car,
right,
if you didn't have the clothes, you know, to be competitive in that field, and even in the industry in Hollywood, if you didn't have those certain things to be able, there was competition because of that. And in the earlier years, not as many openings for women, right? Mm. So you had to actually compete more because you didn't have the pieces of the pie. The pie was much smaller for women. It is changing. It hasn't gotten to an even playing field, using that, again, the context of sports. It hasn't yet gotten to an even playing field. So, but I have seen that there is a switch. There has been a switch somewhat, I think, with more women taking on TV and movie roles, being business people, etc. There's been a switch in the way women are now accepted, I think, in business. And a new set of rules, I think, are there. And it's kind of unspoken. I think maybe with people like the lady behind Facebook now, Lean In, you know, she wrote that book. There's more women actually addressing. She was trying to talk about more women actually stepping up to the plate using another
sports metaphor.
Yes, metaphor. It is still something each woman has to, I think, have a balance, which is home life. If you're going to have children, if you're going to have your work, if you are going to be only living off your own money, or if you're going to be married, what happens if you have children or married, what your husband's going to want? It's a whole different set of rules for women, and it is now changing, but I think you are forced to be a little better at what you do, right? I mean, that's just my own take on it.
I think so. I concur with my business experience. Yeah, that women almost had to be better than men because, there were, like you said, there used to be fewer spots available.
Mm-hmm.
Although I think the glass ceiling, if you will, has now been broken to some degree.
Although, let's see how that works if a woman goes for president again.
I know.
That has not...
You read my thought.
Yeah.
So who's going to be our first woman president?
Well, we don't discuss politics in this show.
Yeah, that's an interesting question, Ori. It's a very... that is competition because that... That's going to be a huge question that is on people's minds already. You know, could Clinton Hillary, not the other Clinton, could Clinton Hillary?
Could we have a woman president?
Yeah, could we have a woman president?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, could we even have a woman vice president? We haven't even been able to go there, right?
Right.
And other countries like Golda Meir and
Angela
India
Merkel.
Yep, and down in Brazil, right?
Yeah, or the. In Germany, Angela Merkel?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So that exists in the world somewhere.
It does. It does exist, and it's waiting to happen. It will be something we see. The question is how soon we'll see it, how soon will we see it, right?
And obviously in Mauitopia, we're not going to be discriminating on age or sex.
Well, we had a woman mayor. We had Linda Lingle here.
That's a good point.
And a woman governor with Linda Lingle as well.
So the, right, so even in Maui, but let alone in Mauitopia, which is this idyllic community that I would like to see happen here on Maui, where, again, everybody's going to be doing what they love, and we treat each other with the kind of way that we like to be treated ourselves.
Excellent.
And I do think cooperation, as you mentioned in sports, and competition can coexist as long as everyone realizes they benefit.
Right.
The problem, I think, comes with that is when the people who are in charge with the rules of cooperation use them to disadvantage for the people who are trying to cooperate. Mm. That's where I think it becomes dangerous. This is kind of where, you know, Jarrell, we were always raised in the 60s, dare I say, with, you know, always question authority, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I had a girlfriend who didn't understand when there was a T-shirt that said question authority. She was like, I don't get it.
Oh, well, yeah, but, you know, this is something we've had to we still sometimes have to come to terms with. Mm. You know, are you cooperating if you question authority? What do you think, Corey?
Yes, within the rules. Because actually some people who have listened to Mauitopia show in the past say, are you talking about anarchy? You know, and the answer is no. We're definitely talking, and Jarrell and I have talked about regulated capitalism, that we're not talking about communism or socialism.
Right.
We're talking about within the existing socioeconomic framework that we currently have.
Which is changing yearly.
It's changing, but not to socialistic.
I was talking to Mayor Alan Arakawa the other day, and he said, we have a socialistic system right now. He actually said that, which shocked me.
Who's we? Talking about the country, or
he's talking about Maui.
He was talking about the country.
Yeah, and again, national politics is maybe different than local politics, and that's why I want to stay away from national politics because I have lots to say about that. But I want to keep that not on the Mauitopia show, because the whole idea is that we want to create something really special here on Maui, unique.
Which then is a model for others to follow.
Exactly.
So how do you feel about cooperation, Jarrell? And how does cooperation work with competition?
As I said a few minutes ago, I think that you have to cooperate in order to compete.
Yeah.
That, like a ball team or a boxing match even. Mm-hmm. You know, they have to agree.
Both sides have to agree to be in the ring.
So it's like cooperation surrounds competition, in a sense. It's the framework in which competition can happen is based on cooperation of the competing parts.
Yeah, I completely agree. Actually, in business, when I used to teach management consulting or quality rapid product development, we taught about co-opetition.
Co-opetition?
Yes.
That's an interesting phrase, co-opetition.
New word.
Wow, that's a good one.
Great. Good.
Co-opetition. Okay, so here's an example. Like, you know, I'm a 49ers fan. Watching the game, there's been some calls that were wrong. They were just downright wrong. And, you know,
did Instant Replay review them?
But they stood still. And depending on, as I watch the games, some places are stricter on the rules or read it one way. Some are not. Some let things go. Some don't. So even in a football game, you have a referee that could have the rules and somehow read their own wrong, right? Their own wrong reading of the rules, and you still have to follow, although we've seen fights break out over this, of course.
Well, and that's why I'm a believer in instant replay
and
coaches' challenges.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so like I said, I'm a believer in following the rules.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're going to, you know, someday, even in Maui, not all the rules are just, you know, we don't agree with all of them.
We don't, yeah.
However, there is a process for changing them.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't believe in creating war in order to change the rules here on Maui.
Mm-hmm.
I believe in taking the long road to changing the laws.
So what about the people who did drop out? There are a lot of people in Maui, or I'm sure some of them are your friends, that are kind of really came here to escape the rest of the world, right?
Yes, that's true. And again, this is
you must have some friends like that too, Jarrell.
I'm thinking about it.
Yeah. They might be living out in Hana.
And that's probably where people who want to escape the world go to Hana.
Huelo has quite a few
Huelo,
of them.
Huelo, yes.
Huelo has quite a few of them.
And again, unfortunately, the bad news for those people is that in order to have a functioning society here on Maui, even on Maui, we all have to agree to a set of rules.
Mm-hmm. Yes, like traffic.
Yeah, good example.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't just go driving 80 miles an hour in a 25-mile-an-hour speed zone.
Okay, here's a question. So when people do question, there's these new computerized financial money system bits, the bits.
Oh, yeah.
Which are, they're trying to create their own financial system that
right.
have nothing to do with other systems. And they make their own set of rules, right? And they have their own rules you have to follow. And they're only X amount of bits they're going to be creating, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
I don't know what you're talking about. So
there's a new financial. It's a computerized creation, and you buy these bits, and the bits can buy things in lots of places, and more and more places will take that instead of money. It's a whole new.
Really?
Yeah. It's only a thing you can do online, but
is there a website?
We'll have to go to our Q&A people and have our quite a few of our computers.
We'll have to check with the brain room on that.
Yeah, so I'm saying this is there are things changing, and I think with the computerized system and the internet, even though we're here in Maui and Mauitopia,
we're not in Mauitopia yet. That's the problem. Because for example, can you vote online?
No.
And the answer exactly is no.
Yeah.
Because we as a society have, and I used to be a poll worker actually, mm-hmm. in several elections, and people don't yet trust that you can in fact vote from your own laptop from your home, and that vote will be legitimate, that there won't be fraud.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to, as a society, whether here on Maui or even the state of Hawaii or even federally, we have to get to a point where the whole system moves forward. Like even this thing about the bit system.
Mm-hmm.
It's a nice idea, and it's great if that ticks over or if something like that ends up working, because money is a pain,
mm-hmm.
you know. But until the whole system is, as long as they're still using cash and dollar bills, I think that's what we have to have right now.
Oh, I agree with you on that. I'm just seeing that the whole system, as we become more and more subject to the internet,
right?
The rules, even having Maui and Mauitopia, the rules are kind of changing there, because anything we do on Maui, a lot of it's done online as well, and
right.
even the show, you know, and even when people can listen to the show, streaming, right? So it's
right, and you can register your car online, mm-hmm. which is wonderful,
mm-hmm.
and so it's a great idea to take advantage of the internet for a lot of things that we used to do. But on the other hand, we still need to go to the supermarket and go to the gas station and go to the bank.
Yeah.
So we're a little bit away from a cashless society, although, again, someday, maybe.
Yeah, someday, maybe.
Jarrell, do you have a final wrap-up comment?
I have a question. How many people are listening?
Thousands. And more importantly, just the right ones, Jarrell.
How do you know that?
Intuitively.
Well, I know I know myself, because I put my shows up, and then I'm able to also stream through Podbean and other places, Spreaker and iHeartRadio, and I keep track of that. And we have ratings here that show, over 13,000, 14,000 people listening.
Which is not bad. So that's 10% of the population
actually,
of Maui.
Yeah, we've gone up from 13. There are figures you can get on things such as that, which I disagree with, which I dislike, because, again, they're subject to mistakes, right? I mean, because they are subject to the rating system, which how many, and that is that the real final law? Is it the truth, or is it just a cross-section of people that don't reflect the whole? But, again, people want that question
numbers,
and that answer,
right?
So you give that question and that answer. You know, it's like people like Facebook, because you can see how many friends you have. You can see how many likes you get. To me, it drives me crazy. It's like, oh, God, I've got a million Facebook, likes,
Right.
It's like, yeah, so I'm important, right?
I'm just laughing because my wife last night was saying she unliked or unfriended a couple people on Facebook.
Uh-huh.
You know, she's too upset with them, and she's like, you know, I don't want them to see
life. I hear about breakups. I hear about deaths. I hear about everything. I mean, you know, Facebook has become a medium, you know, and like it or not, I mean, people judge you now by your Facebook presence, right?
Yes.
And your website.
So I have three things to comment on.
Mm-hmm.
One is live your dream in 2014.
Okay.
And love as much as you can from wherever you are. And I invite you and others to look at jorl.org. So, because my commitment to the Mankind Project and the world is to speak more, share more, and mentor more. And I, at 77, am able to do that with great pleasure. So it's Jor-El, JOR-EL.org, for anyone who's listening. And you guys, I love you both.
Thank you too. So take care. Happy New Year.
Which is Superman's father.
Yeah,
right. Jor-El is the name of Superman's father. I adopted that as my middle name.
Well, we love you too, Jor-El, and thank you so much for calling, and Happy New
Year.
Pleasure.
Let me know when you're going to do this again, and I will get other people on to the calls. Thank you. Aloha.
Aloha. Jor-El is always fun.
Yes.
Yeah, it's amazing. He's 77.
I did not know that. He's great shape. But, you know, age is so, right? I mean, age is so relative these days. You know, 77 is the new 57, right? 57 is like the new 27. But you know what I'm saying. It's all relative, especially with plastic surgery.
Well, I used to think I was invincible. And
yes.
That age was all in the mind. But then 4 years ago, I got the disease of multiple sclerosis, which is a nerve disease, which the good news is it doesn't kill me. So I'm going to live as long as everybody else. However, I use a walker to walk.
Mm-hmm.
So I am no longer in state championship shape to play tennis like I used to be when I was 18.
And I have to really applaud you. I mean, a lot of people are not aware of you. You don't usually talk about it. You travel, and you've gone to Guam, you went to Michigan for the holidays, and you are not letting multiple sclerosis and being on a walker limit what you wish to do. And I have friends and even a family member who is mostly paralyzed, who can do a little bit of walking with a walker, but definitely lets it limit her. And it's easy, it's very easy to let something like that limit what you're doing. And I mean, I think it's a credit to your practices and meditation and your thinking and your background that you're not letting that stop you, which I think is a wonderful example to others who might have a challenging health situation, or someone who is going, gosh, it's just too much of a hassle to try to get places and go places because I'm having a hard time walking.
I'm handicapped, yeah.
Yeah, you know, I mean, and that takes a lot of courage.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And actually, the true story is that after I got diagnosed in January of 2010, I decided to stop a lot of my business travel for my management consulting, and I ran for mayor. And I came in eighth out of 11 people who ran, and it doesn't mean that I was going to become mayor at that particular time.
Mm-hmm.
But I still plan to run for mayor again.
You are going to.
Of course.
Oh, my gosh.
Because in my heart, my mission is to create Mauitopia.
Yes, but you say you don't want to be in politics. I didn't say that. Oh, I thought you didn't want to be in politics. You don't want to get involved in the national politics.
I don't want to spend time on this one-hour show discussing national politics.
I thought you just didn't want to be in politics.
Oh, I have to be in politics.
You have to be.
Yeah.
To make Mauitopia.
That's right.
With the new set of rules.
Which are mostly the existing rules. I mean, we may need to change a couple rules, but again, I mean, even to get elected mayor, I would have to do it through the existing system.
Of course you would, yeah.
You know, unless you create a real revolution. And
and I have to say that a lot of people don't know how complicated it is to try to be involved in the political system. There are many, many rules, including the station. The radio station has rules here.
Right.
You know, by the way, when you run for mayor, you can't be another radio shows. Anytime anyone has an office that they're running for, since they announce it, we have to follow rules given to us by the FCC and follow those rules as well, right? With equal time.
which is why we're doing this show now.
Well, no, if you pay for a show and you have your show, you can do that without equal time. But if you are on someone else's show, then they would have to offer equal time to anyone competing, All right, so say you were on another show here that is a show that's paid for by the station or Don Couch's show, whatever. Don Couch, in fact, he won't be able to continue his show if he announces he's running for office again. He had to go off airing his show that's on Tuesday mornings after he announced, you know, he was running for office before.
Yeah, on the Couch show, right?
Yes, that's right. There's rules in all of that. And so, again, a lot of people are kind of stopped by the rules you have to go through. What does it take to run for mayor? What do you have to do? What are the forms you have to fill? What do you have to do?
Well, you have to get 25 signatures, to people who are willing to...
I think we have 25 people here.
Oh, okay. Good. Yeah, that's not too bad.
Okay.
And then the next issue is raising money, if you want to do that.
That's the bitch.
And that is another thing that I have an issue with. Last time I used under $1,000 to run my campaign.
Not.
Yes. Now, obviously, if...
Wow, you can't do much for under $1,000.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's the conventional wisdom. And
the reality is you can't do much for $100,000. If you look at what most people spend, even people who aren't wealthy people, I asked Don how much he spent.
I know Mayor Arakawa. He spent $40,000, and he was very proud of that because the person he won against, not the last time, the time before, was $80,000.
Mm-hmm.
So you can do it on a lower budget, but still that was $40,000.
Mm-hmm.
I personally object to having to raise $40,000 to win a race for mayor.
Well, of course, because what happens is, of course, you get donations from people, and if you have people giving you donations, then you have to answer the people who have donations.
Exactly, then you owe them something, right?
Which, of course, is politically in our country when they made people, corporations, people.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was the beginning of a huge downward spiral when they started to say corporations are people. But that doesn't affect, you couldn't do that in Maui, but in a federal office you could do it. Is that correct? You couldn't say you're accepting that you were a corporation, or you could accept gifts from corporations. I don't think that's locally. I don't know about that for mayor. I know nationally, of course, corporate, that's when we started seeing huge changes in the TV ads and the amount of money spent on TV ads for running, especially for president in this last election. We saw a lot of that.
And that's why I say that I want to try to not have money involved in our political races here on Maui. Again, we're not in Maui-topa yet.
How would you stop that?
By declaring it early in the race.
But
seeing if the other people in the race would agree to that.
Boy.
Say, for example, we all agreed to the campaign spending commission's limits.
Well, I don't think that's going to happen.
Well, we can try.
So you could actually all agree?
Mm-hmm.
And if the people are running would agree not to spend over what?
Whatever the limit is.
Interesting limit?
I don't know it off the top of my head.
That would change the playing.
Yeah.
Talk about changing the playing field again.
Yes.
And that's one
of my things is interest in changing the playing field because, again, we're not in Maui-topia yet. Mm-hmm. We're in Maui. But we would like to go to Maui-topia, and maybe that's going to be 20 years from now or 30 years from now or whatever, but still in my lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to make those incremental steps that will get there.
Well, and then here you go again. Here's competition.
Right.
I hate to say it, but you're most likely not going to get mayor, Ori. I love you, but, I hate to say it, but I don't think you're going to make it.
Well, my first problem is the color of my skin, to be honest, because, so let me ask a question for everybody out there. There have been, this county of Maui, we've been electing mayors for about 50 years. How many of those mayors have had white skin?
Linda Lingle.
Good answer. Exactly,
yeah.
Cindy.
Yeah.
And all the rest did not.
And she has a lot of money behind her. Family money.
Yeah. Right. Now, I may be very tan, but I am officially a Caucasian.
Mm-hmm.
So the odds are against me right there to ever becoming mayor of Maui. On the other hand, the population is changing. There are more and more Caucasian people moving in, so I don't know how that will affect elections in the future. But
well, it will affect. I mean, but you have to realize there's still, as you know, a huge amount of power based in some of the old structures of people and the people who've been in control and still have a lot of power in control for quite a long time, and that is always going to be a factor.
Right, and this is exactly a good time, Gary, to play this song, "Us and Them."
I was just, I love that song. I absolutely, that's always been one of my favorite Pink Floyd songs.
And I guess throughout time, there's always an us and them, right? I mean, when the United States was founded, mm-hmm. there, we were a bunch of British subjects, right, who decided we wanted to create a new country here. And right or wrong, whether you agree with this, the United States is today seen as the single most powerful country on the planet.
Mm-hmm. And within our own country, we have the us and them.
That's right. Exactly.
A lot of structures, many, many infrastructures of us and them. And a lot of people, and again, I don't want to go too much into politics, a lot of people will say it's bringing down our whole country, the us and them consciousness between the two different parties.
Yes, which on the national level, I agree. And hopefully in Maui, we will create Mauitopia, where we will slide towards more of an us consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And there's got to be some us in them. I mean, we're not all going to be taking our money and handing it out on the street, but the competition will be under rules and we all treat with each other with fairness and kindness.
Well, we had a show years ago, it seemed like, on Aloha. And of course, Aloha would have that those principles.
And that's one of the single biggest reasons I think Maui is a perfect place to create Mauitopia, is, you know the book, I'm sure, Practice Aloha.
I do know the book very well. I'm in the book.
Ah. But the whole Aloha spirit, which is really a very important part of the fabric of living in Hawaii.
Well, I wrote the song Practicing Aloha in coordination
which
with...
Which we played, actually.
Yes, and Mark Elman and... And I'm seeing, I have to say, just in the last few years, I'm seeing more and more Practice Aloha bumper stickers. And I do see the Aloha spirit is very well and alive. But I have to say, it kind of got thrown out the window a few days before Christmas there. You go to Costco, you go to those places.
It's a war.
Oh, my gosh. The traffic kind of brought out... And the long lines kind of brought out the not the Aloha spirit, the
not,
opposite. Of
not
the
best
spirit.
In people.
Which is a shame because it was all about Christmas. And
right. But, a season of giving, it should be. But.
Yes. But people got under the feeling of having to give. And it's kind of sad that we feel we have to get gifts. But you in families, yeah, you got kids, you got to get gifts, right? I mean, you got to. You know, it's and a lot of people like me feel like you have to get some gifts, you know, so you, when you have that obligation, then there's a pressure put on people, right?
Yes, pressure is, I know all about pressure. Having grown up Jewish, they say the Jews invented guilt and the Catholics perfected it.
Yes, I grew up in Beverly Hills. I went to Beverly Hills schools, and I think we actually, in Beverly Hills High, the school shut down for Jewish holidays.
Oh.
It did. I mean, there was like maybe 5-10% of the people who were not Jewish.
Right.
So, I mean, I was definitely in the minority, and it was interesting being in that situation, you know. And, of course, you and I, as you just mentioned, we're minorities, being Howleys.
Right.
We're minorities here, which I think is really very good.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's excellent practice in being a minority. You don't get onto a power trip if you're in a minority as much, but you can
agree
get
with you.
You can get overly aggressive. I was talking about my situation being a woman as a minority situation of me being in radio, being a minority. You do have to work extra hard.
I was just looking at the clock and realizing that we haven't said that if anybody would like to call, feel free to call in. The number is 242-7800.
Very good. That's the number, 242-7800. And we're talking about competition, cooperation, and Mauitopia. And that covers a pretty wide a pretty wide variety of different topics that could be covered in it. But, of course, I like the topic that you brought up, which is sports, you know, and how sports work with cooperation and in competition. And you can see, I mean, you can see how, as we get closer to the Super Bowl, how hard some of these teams are working. And you do see, I mean, almost miraculous things happen when these players are out in the field under pressure.
Right.
And they've got to pull it off, you know, with a minute to go, you know.
And sometimes they do things that they wouldn't have expected they'd be, even they would be able to pull off. And that is the advantage of competition, right?
Yeah.
I mean, even, for example, if I look back at my personal life in terms of when I played tennis, since I gave up football in ninth grade, I was a state champion in doubles in the state of Michigan in 1980. And one of the things that the competition kept making me do is having to make me better. And that's an advantage of competition.
Yeah. No, I think that is. As long as you don't, boy, what should we say, unfairly compete. I mean, this is
there's
where, you know,
again.
Steroids
yeah.
and drugs and
right.
drug enhancements. And,
exactly.
And we saw, you know, I mean, God, when we had our champion, Lance Armstrong.
Oh, boy, that was a disappointment.
I mean,
huh?
Yeah, I mean, here was a man who was representing, I mean,
horrible.
Us and such a huge champion.
Right.
And so many times
said I didn't take it.
But he was saying it was being used. And I do believe him that it was kind of the standard, and it was just one of the things you don't talk about. You don't talk about it if everyone's doing it. It's just the let's not talk about it and look the other way because we want to see someone who's a champion. Well, you know that's the truth, though, right? I mean, there's a lot of times people turn their head when they knew that this was happening, you know, and it still is a huge question with the Olympics coming up.
So you're saying he got caught? Is that he was the only
one
who got caught?
He had his teammates his teammates turned him in, you know, and busted him, so to speak. I mean, there was a 60 Minutes story. I don't know if you saw that.
I did, but the point is still that, from my point of view, everybody should be following the rules, and even whoever gets busted. They can't complain.
What was that time in the Olympics? Tanya Harding, was that it?
Yes.
Yeah, came out.
Tanya Harding.
Remember when she took and broke the leg of her competitor? She was competing,
yeah.
And she actually had hired people to break the leg of her competitor. You remember that one?
I do.
Yeah, I mean, that's competition.
I'm trying to
the max.
The name of her opponent just escaped my mind.
Yeah.
But anyways, yeah.
And remember what they said, they were saying even in the last Olympics that they were questioning if some of, I think it was the Russian teams, were actually men that had become women in the gymnastics. And that question came up, were they really men that had become women and were calling it? You know, you remember when that came up?
No, actually.
It was a very interesting point. It was actually a challenge that they said some of the, and the women gymnastic teams, they thought some of the people were men.
Had done a sex conversion?
Yeah, and so what happens then, right?
And what do the IOC, International Olympic Committee rules say?
I don't remember the outcome, but
okay.
I know they were allowed to play still.
Huh.
But it was a huge issue, and I had never heard it come up before. I mean, I'd never really realized it had come up before, but... But again, competition can bring out the best, is what I'm saying, but it also
exactly.
can bring out the underbelly.
The worst, yeah.
It can, you know, it can bring out that other side. I remember even here on Maui when there were people, we'll bring up Linda Lingle again. I mean, there was a whisper campaign against her that she was a lesbian, and it definitely hurt her when she was running for office one time, and it was being put out there. And she admits this. She brings this up when she talks, says it's not something that's not recognized. She recognizes it. And so you will see this happen in competition, even here on Maui. You know, there's other people that have been subject to whisper campaigns here on Maui as well. When you're competing, sometimes you're going to have to deal with and be strong to deal with the fact that people – and I hate to say this, I've talked to people who've thought of even running for office, and they don't want to have to be attacked like that.
That's the first thing people say to me is like, hey, why would you want to get into a dirty game like politics?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's pretty much the stereotype most people have of doing something in politics. And again, here on Maui, we're better than in the mainland, but we're certainly not perfect.
No, and but that's human nature, isn't it? I mean, you think about it throughout history.
And hopefully human nature is evolving.
I believe human nature, I absolutely 100% believe human nature is evolving. And I believe we're further ahead spiritually and morally more now than ever before.
Good.
But because we are, there are going to be people who see that as a weakness and will try to attack that, saying, oh, they're going to take the moral high road, so we can now do this. Well, I've seen that happen.
Right. And the battle between good and evil continues.
And is it part of our planet, our world? Is it? I mean, I've questioned this a lot, Ori. I really, really have questioned this a lot. And I sometimes think we're put here on Earth, or we choose, and I do believe we choose to come to this Earth, unless we have karmically, we have to come. But we do that, and even if you, and I believe in Christ, even I believe he chose to come here, and there are many masters that come here, knowing that the rules are going to be stacked against them, and the nature of people is to kill the heroes. We can go down the long list of heroes who've been killed, you know. We can
say, including politicians.
Yes, like John F. Kennedy, obviously. John Lennon, if you want to go into rock stars. And sometimes that's the nature of this planet, is that you're going to be here, and you're going to have to withstand the fact that there's some violence here, whether you like it or not, and there's going to be people who will attack you if you speak your truth.
And I'd like to make a prediction.
Okay.
That physical violence might end in our lifetime. That
is huge. So.
Okay,
sure,
so I'm going to say it again.
I sure hope so.
That, in fact, in the last time I did
this
show.
Does that include shooting people with guns?
Yeah.
Boy, you got a long ways to go on that one.
And, of course, there may be isolated instances, but I believe that our society, the human society on planet Earth overall, is evolving from a place where wars were pretty much a regular thing. In fact, one of the shows, last time I did Mauitopia, was about wars and, in fact, the fact that in World War One, I'm trying to remember the numbers.
Millions, yeah, it's
the numbers kept bigger and bigger,
yes,
right?
Yeah.
33 million in World War II, and that World War III would be even worse. So, I mean, given the technology has gotten so powerful and that people are so primitive in terms of being willing to, you know, drop a atom bomb on whoever at any time, that hopefully us as a species will realize the folly of our ways. And I believe,
wasn't this the Cold War and all of that? Remember all of that whole thing? I remember duck and cover. I'm old enough to remember having to hide under my desk, and we'd have drills.
Right.
I mean, thank God our children don't have to practice duck and cover anymore. But here we are in the Pacific, and maybe possibly in reach of North Korea, getting a little bit crazy.
And when I was in Guam, there was the U.S. Navy came to protect Guam because North Korea was making sounds about possibly launching a rocket.
That's right. That was when that was going
yes.
on, right? And the Navy did come.
Yes, they did.
And what kind of alerts and what kind of talk were you hearing on the street about that when that happened?
Well, nobody knew, but the rockets ended up just going into the sea. It was just supposedly a military exercise, but nobody knew because
it's
a madman that runs North Korea.
That's right.
Right? So, anyways, the
And who is his hero?
Oh, geez.
Dennis
the basketball?
Rodman.
Yeah.
Right? And why Dennis Rodman? Here you go, back to sports again.
Who knows, right?
Dennis Rodman is going over there and giving him advice.
Right.
I mean, who would think a leader like someone of North Korea would have Dennis Rodman, who as his pal, as his buddy, you know, having him putting.
Yeah,
I mean,
and then you look at the fact that all millions of people in North Korea are starving.
Yes.
You know, their standard of living is poor.
Oh, it's terrible.
I mean, if you look at the difference between North Korea and South Korea, it's huge. But anyways, this is getting a little bit off the topic, but I just made the prediction that there are a certain number of people in the world who will have to not continue with the population as a whole to get to this place where we are beyond war. Mm. I was in an organization in the 1980s in Palo Alto, California, called Beyond War was the name of the organization. Yeah. And I think that is a good slogan, a good idea, to get, because again, there will still be competition amongst human beings. I mean, like you were talking about men and women and all that, but I would like to see, and I think many of us would like to see, it get to the point where it is not physical competition in terms of killing. You know, we should all be able to make mistakes and then still recover from it and be able to try it again. Which you can't do if you kill.
Well,
if
I think we're
going
to have to change our video games, Ori, if you want to see that happen.
Oh, that's a good point, because the kids are growing up
maybe
with
some of our movies.
Yeah.
I mean, I hate to say it, but I really believe video games are a terrible influence on the kids that are watching this. You know, it's just, I mean, it's all, I went to buy it, you know, it was when they just first started. I went to buy a video game for my grandson, and I said, I want a video game that's not violent. And the guy just broke out in laughter. Says, there are no video games that aren't violent. The kids want the violent video. They're all video games.
Sells.
They're all violent, you know? I mean, so how do we, if kids want violent video games and they're watching violence and we're wanting no violence, and boy, they've got to, I mean, I'm all for it, Ori. I'm all for it. I pray for peace every day, but we've got a ways to go.
And that's for sure. And I just saw the movie about Nelson Mandela, Long Walk to Freedom.
Yes.
And I was shocked at how ignorant I was that we're talking about in my lifetime, how bad apartheid was, where there was, you know, blacks were second-class citizens in South Africa.
Oh, yeah.
However, the Nelson Mandela became president, and now they made a movie of him.
Well, look at the war still going on. Look at Rwanda. I mean, look what in our lifetime still, how many things have happened. Africa's,
there have been a lot of changes in our life, including the Berlin Wall falling. And now, of course, we've got the peace in the Middle East, which is definitely a hard subject.
Yeah.
Let me, before we finish the show, I want to read the definition of Mauitopia. Mauitopia will be an ideal utopian society of the future. A first-of-its-kind place in the world on the scale of over 100,000 people where, thanks to technology, all of us have our survival needs met of food, clothing, and shelter while pursuing our individual self-actualization. A place where we'd find true happiness by each contributing our unique gifts to the community. A place where we can all coexist in peace and harmony with no crime, and where we can all help each other grow and succeed. Mauitopia's free market economics will be based on regulated capitalism and make the island a real paradise, Maui truly no ka'oi. In Mauitopia, we all win as we serve the rest of the world as a model of the society of the future. My name is Ori Kopelman, and I'm here with my host, Cindy Paulus.
And a big aloha to everyone.
And Happy New Year to everybody.